listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Every year, the Perseid meteor shower is one of the highlights of summer stargazing. It started about a week ago and will peak August 11th through the 13th. These meteors are debris left by the passing Swift Tuttle comet burning in the Earth's atmosphere, and the Perseids are known for bright, frequent meteor sightings. Our astronomy contributor Gene Creighton joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about this annual meteor shower and how to best see it. She begins by explaining what exactly meteor showers are made of.
Your typical shooting star starts the size, it's a little piece of debris about the size of a grain of sand. It enters the atmosphere of the Earth going about 80,000 miles an hour. And that is such a shock, if you will, that it makes the air around it glow, and that's what we see as those quick streaks of light. Now, it turns out that certain times of the year, we can predict that we're going to have more than usual shooting stars. So any night, any time, as long as it's clear, they're about five an hour on average. But a few times a year, there could be 100 or more. That's what we call a meteor shower because there's so many of them. And we know when that's going to happen. We can predict it because the Earth travels through the orbit of a comet. And although we're not going to get anywhere close to the comet, we are going to go through the debris that the comet leaves behind. And that's why we can say, oh, between the 11th and the 12th of August, we will see more meteor showers than usual.
And just how shooting stars and meteors are connected, you touched upon the comet, and the Perseids occurring annually are made of the debris from the comet Swift Tuttle. So is there a slight difference or a connection similar to how shooting stars and meteors are connected of the connection or difference between a meteor and a comet?
Okay, so a meteor is a very local phenomenon that happens because a small amount of debris enters our atmosphere, right? So that's a very local thing. Nobody outside the Earth's atmosphere would be able to see that. A comet is a sometimes a mile across, frozen kind of, they're sometimes described as dirty ice. So these can be much larger things that as they approach the sun, some of their material is going to evaporate, leaving behind this beautiful tail. And comets can take dozens of years to go around the sun, or hundreds or thousands of years, depending on what kind of comet it is. So the connection between comets and shooting stars is that some of that debris that entered the atmosphere could be from a comet, because comets shed material all the time. But the other possibility is that it comes from an asteroid. Because asteroids, there are lots and lots of asteroids in the solar system. Sometimes they bang into each other. Even a glancing hit will produce debris that eventually can find itself near the atmosphere of the Earth. And a further connection, what's kind of cool too, is that the material that make up asteroids tends to be sturdier than the stuff of comets. So if a little bit of a comet comes into our atmosphere, it's not going to survive to hit the ground. But an asteroid, which is made of more rocky material, is more likely to survive. It's not certain, but it's more likely to survive. And if it does hit the ground, we call that a meteorite, because we might pick it up, I like to think of it as.
That is a good, handy way to remember it. So
yeah.
With the Perseids, it has a connection to the constellation Perseus. So why is this shower named after that?
Because it seems to radiate from the direction of the Perseid constellation. That does not mean that the best thing to do is to look at the constellation. Generally speaking, the best way to see a meteor shower is to have as expansive a horizon as you can so that you can see as much as possible. It's been now a few years, but I saw a really nice, what we call a fireball. So from time to time, if the piece of debris is about the size of an orange, then what it produces is much brighter, and it will outshine a planet. Then we call it a fireball. And the other nice thing about the Perseids, other than it's in mid-August and the weather is decent and it's nice to be outside and sitting around for some time, the other nice thing about it is we seem to have activity for several days on either side. So it's not like one of these events where if it's cloudy on the 11th of August, then you're toast. That's not how it works. You might have just as good a chance to see reasonable meteors, you know, days on either side of that.
What are your tips about how you can best view a meteor shower? You mentioned it's an every night occurrence, but when we're in the city and used to a certain amount of light pollution, what's the best way to really take advantage of these astronomical events?
I think the key point is to be comfortable. People don't realize that if I'm sitting, like there's only so much I can look up without getting my neck hurting, right? So ideally you would want to have a situation where you can recline, you can look up without putting any stress on your neck. And that could be a lawn chair. If it's warm enough, I guess you can put a couple of blankets and lie down. The practical advice that people give is if you're still for any long period of time, the temperature feels 20 degrees cooler than what the thermometer says. So bring something to put on, and obviously put some mosquito repellent, because the mosquitoes will have a wonderful time too. Maybe they've booked the Perseid shower too as a good meal time. And I think the key with meteor showers is to be prepared to watch the sky for some time. It's not one of those things where, you know, I'm going to give this 5 minutes to perform for me. It's not like an eclipse where it really is. This is it. I'm going to focus for 8 minutes. It's nice to relax, you know, chat with your friends, just look up, and you'll be rewarded reasonably well. And even if you're not, I mean, the nice thing about gazing at the night sky is that you'll get to enjoy a beautiful sky, and Mars is up as well. I mean, there are other things to look for in addition to meteor showers. So that would be my advice. Make yourself comfortable, be prepared to sit there for a while.
You mentioned on an average night, it's about 5 shooting stars that we'll see an hour. So given this Perseid shower, at its peak in August, on average, how many can people see in an hour during this specific event?
People sometimes make predictions, and this is not what I do for a living. You know, sometimes they'll say, oh, it's going to be a good one. Oh, maybe it's not going to be so good. I'm not going to repeat any of that, because I find that if you set people up for, oh, this is going to be your life's, you know, meteor shower experience, then invariably they're disappointed. I would say if you see 5 good ones, if you happen to be looking up for, you know, an hour or so, an hour and a half, and I know that you might think, well, that's contradicting, Jane. You just told us that it's 5 an hour anyway. Yeah, but you have to be looking at the right place at the right time to see the 5 in an hour. I say if you see 5 good ones, then you can call it a day. And you can stay longer, of course, if you like. But I think if you see 5 beautiful meteors, that's pretty good. Most of us don't get to see that on a daily basis. Usually the claim is that you can see, you know, dozens, 20, 40. But in reality, if you don't have a super duper dark sky, we also have issues with haze, with high humidity. I mean, the atmosphere might not be as crisp as it might be in other places. So I would say if you, as I said, you see 5, 10 really good ones, you scored.
Well, if anything, I think this time has taught us a little more patience and to take advantage of local field trips. So I think this is a great place to start.
Great. Yeah, I do hope that people will take that opportunity. And, you know, sometimes we get unlucky and the clouds come up and you think, So I would say, here's my other piece of advice. Rather than spending a whole lot of time driving for hours and hours and hours, and then you've really made an investment and the stakes are high, I would say it's better to drive not quite so far, but being prepared perhaps to do it twice if the weather betrays you as you're going there, which can happen. That would be my suggestion. Try to avoid putting too many eggs in one basket. Go twice.
Excellent advice. Well, Jean, thank you so much.
Thank you, Audrey.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, and she's our regular astronomy contributor. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find our past conversations about astronomy at wuwm.com. Thank you.